This is the Colorado Real Estate Experience. My name is Dick Girard, and my co-host is Pat Draw. And we are focusing on building wealth through real estate. And today we're going to talk about the new year and some of our predictions, where we think the market's going to go, and resolutions, and how do you keep your finances going in the right direction.
Well, it's New Year, Dick, and that's exactly what people want. They want to hear, you know, we all think about these things, and how many times in October you're like, you know what, I'll focus on that in January. You know, starting the first summer, it's going to be new. I'm going to do something different.
Yeah. Working out, eating right, and getting your money right. Those are the biggest resolutions that people do, and it's the middle of January, so a lot of people have already got off their resolution. So we need to make sure that we help any way that we can at you keeping your money right and trying to build wealth the best way you can. And it's not rocket science. You know, everybody gets really afraid of talking about their money and talking about finance. And it really boils down to, you know, spending less than you make and investing that extra into something that's going to build wealth in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you start picking apart the finer points of not necessarily just building wealth through real estate, but just like, if you're talking about, you know, let's say resolutions, right? So what do you want to do differently this year than you did last? And I think the big thing is, like anything else, and I know people can relate to this when it comes to exercising, dieting, and money, everybody wants to bite everything off in these big chunks, right? And the one thing I will tell you is this, and we're not going to go into the exercise and the diet thing, obviously, but, you know, those things generally are fairly drastic. You know, people go from not doing anything to wanting to run a marathon or to compete in a CrossFit competition, whatever it is. So, I mean, there's drasticness there. People want to go from you know, eating out every night and drinking beer to eating nothing but chicken breasts and salads. So, I mean, they're generally, they don't create any middle ground. Where I think in the finances, well, let me back up. I think it's important that's to have drastic changes, like physically like that, you have to do those types of things. In finances, it's not the same way. In finances, the really cool thing that I like, especially when I'm sitting there talking to my customers, is I'm you know, it doesn't take as much as people might think. The strategy is long-term, which is similar to anything you're doing physically, but it's easier to, you're not as worried about seeing the results quite the same. You just know they're going to work if you do them in small increments over a long period of time. And we could talk about that and breaking it down in a million different ways, from investing to paying off debt to creating more wealth in, you know, within your house or your house as an asset. So those types of things are a lot easier because the physicality is not there in terms of you having to go, well, I'm just not seeing it the same way, so I don't want to do it. You know, you just know that if you do these small things, which is what we can talk about, it's going to make a big difference in the long run, but you got to start somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's a great analogy with the eating right and the dieting and the food, because, you know, what do you do? What do a lot of people do? You know, it's the crash diet, you know, the fad diet that is not sustainable, you know?
Right.
And I think people do that with their finances too. This get rich quick, you know, we want to, you know, be a, you know, make $100,000 overnight, you know, yeah. Or going back to the food analogy, we want to eat everything that we want. We want dessert every night. We want to, you know, eat whatever we want, but we want to take a pill that negates all that, you know? Right. And it's kind of the same thing with making money, you know, and building wealth. We want to spend everything and we want to do everything that we want to do, but you can't do that. It's got to be a compromise. You have to be able to sacrifice something now to have something in the future. And it's the exact same thing with weight loss or a diet. A good nutritious diet, you know, isn't, like you said, just eating, you know, chicken breasts and nothing else the rest of your life. You know, you can't sustain that most people can't sustain that.
Right.
And it's the same way you can't do a drastic thing with your finances either, you know, and we're never going to go out to dinner, you know, ever again. You know, that's not sustainable for most people. So what we want to do is help you have kind of a compromise in those kind of things. And one of those things is building wealth through your house. You have to live somewhere, right? So why waste your money on spending it on rent when you could, you know, pay rent to yourself by paying your mortgage down and build wealth that way. So that's one way that we're going to help you, you know, build wealth with being able to have more things.
Well, and to kind of put like a physical spin on it, I mean, the one thing that I think is really cool about when you talk about changing your finances is that you can do little things that you don't feel that really take shape and make a big difference in the long run. And so, I totally agree that with all of them, no matter what you're talking about, people want to see everything right away. And if they don't, they get totally discouraged and just move on.
Right.
However, I don't think that there's the tangible part of it is quite the same, because, you know, if somebody puts $50 a month in a savings account, right? And let's say it's just a regular savings, not even interest bearings. So they can see it, right? They can see it immediately in their savings account. They can see a buildup. They know it's there. It creates this comfort. If you're trying to, let's say, lose 5 pounds and you're doing all these things to do it, and then you only lose one, you get discouraged. You know, so I think that there's a whole tangible side to really taking control of your finances that give you success along the way that you might not see in the other stuff. Excuse me. So, I mean, when we talk about these things and we talk about building wealth, and we talk about, excuse me, we talk about how it really impacts you going forward. I like the fact that we can create this tangible thing that we can see and we can feel success with as we move down the line. And like I said, it's as simple as putting $50 a paycheck away, right? Putting in a savings account and doing the right thing with it. Not a savings account that's connected to your checking account. So if you have overdraft, because it creates this almost too much of a safety net, but almost like go to a bank, right? Set up a separate savings account. Don't even get a card to it, right? I mean, you want to have access, you know, tell them, I don't want a card. If I'm going to get this, I have to physically go into the bank. I've got to fill out a, you know, withdrawal slip, and I have to get the money that way. So you have it, but you don't have such easy access to it. You know, you get an online account or whatever, you can see it, and it's like, hey, I put $50 away. Hey, well, I've been doing this for 6 months, and now I've got, you know, $800 or $900 in there. So it builds this level of cushion and comfort that maybe you kind of forget about that you're doing it every month. You forget about it, but you know it's there.
Yep. Well, and I think with money and with building wealth, the first thing you have to do is really understand who you are too. We've talked about it. You know, you have kids and I have kids, and they're all different with money. They grew up in the same household, but they're a little different with their, you know, some people are spenders, some people are savers, right? You know, I have brothers that are spenders and I'm more of a saver, and it's, and neither one of those is wrong, but you have to understand which one of those you are. Yep. And like, if you're a real spender and you have the money there and you're going to spend it, then you definitely have to do what you were talking about and lock that money away somewhere where you can't do it. Where some other people can have total access to the money and they'll never touch it. So you really have to understand who you are and what you want. You know, if you want $1 million or $10 million, or you want to just be comfortable, none of those answers are wrong. You have to just understand what you want and what you're willing to give up to get there. And I think those are the big things, but it's very much of a, and I think that's why people aren't good with money, because they don't want to really connect with themselves and get real, make those decisions on who you really are and how you're going to move forward to get what you want.
Well, and so here's a great example, because you just mentioned how you're a saver. I'm the opposite. I'm a spender. However, I love saving, because I like I mentioned before, I like the feeling of success when I see money go in there. However, if it's in my checking account, you know, I just, this is how I've done it my whole life. I realize my limitations, and it's not as much about blowing money as it is enjoying it, right? Like, I work hard. We work a lot, and there's a lot of effort that goes into this business that we're in, that we've been in. And so I believe that I want to be able to spend it. However, I also don't want to be drained. So what I do is at the beginning of every month, every paycheck, I put it all away. Everything I want to save, I have my savings goals, I put it all away. And then whatever I have left, I don't worry about it.
Right.
I spend that, but I've already put everything away. Like, I've got my set savings for retirement that comes out automatically that I can't touch. I've got my savings that goes into my true savings account or my other investment accounts. Those go out automatically. And then within the day, which, you see my account go from this to this in a day, but it's good because all the stuff that I need to deal with is gone. And then I have whatever's left is like, hey, whatever you want, budget it, spend it, however you want, doesn't matter. If you want to go out to eat, waste it, that's fine because everything else is already put away. But I know that if I leave that money in there, it'll all dwindle down in some way because I'll do something dumb with it, So I realize my limitations. And I think that's the key for anybody with anything, especially when you're talking about investing. What are your limitations? If they're like you and you, I have people I know and I don't know how they do it. I physically can't see it, but they do it. These guys can leave their money in their checking account and they can build their checking account balance up to X and they just don't spend it, And but they're incredibly disciplined and they just think differently. And that's great. I know that I can't do that. So I don't.
And I think the most important thing is everybody wants to be the opposite, Right. It's like, I have daughters, and when you have curly hair, you want straight hair, you have straight hair, you want curly hair,
Yeah.
And it's, you have no hair, you want hair, right?
Exactly. And, right.
but there's, and I think that's the same, you would like to be a saver. Well, you wouldn't want to be a saver,
Right.
I've kind of changed through the years, the older I've gotten. I used to be way more of a saver. I wouldn't spend any money. And I think that that's kind of a mistake, at least for me. I would rather be more like you and spend a little more and live in the moment a little more. But yeah, you have to just understand who you are and don't try to be something you're not. If you're not a super saver kind of person, understand that and then put a plan together like you have a plan. Whether it's right or wrong, it's a plan, Right. And that's the first step, is to make a plan, and we really believe that part of that plan should be getting into real estate and buying a home to live in and letting that wealth build up while you're living in that home, and then use that equity to buy other real estate and that type of thing, because it's the best way that we've seen to build wealth. And, there's only a few things that you can do to really invest and to build wealth, and it's buy stocks, get your own business or do real estate. Those are basically the main investments that we have at our disposal to build wealth. Right.
Right. Well, and that's, so in transitioning from making a point about savings and how you do it and your limitations, that's the beauty of building wealth in real estate, because everybody has to live somewhere.
Right.
And we're talking, when I say everybody, I'm talking about adults. I mean, obviously children have to live somewhere too, but I'm talking about, let's say somebody in their mid 20s that's out of college, that they're going to more than likely, at least a very high percentage of them, are going to be paying rent or a mortgage, one or the other. Whether they're living with somebody and paying to live with them, whether they're sharing it with roommates, or whether they have their own place, they're paying to live there. So it's almost, not almost, it is absolutely a forced savings account when you're paying to live somewhere and you own a home, right? And the fact of the matter is, it's extremely easy to buy a house, especially as a first-time home buyer, because there are lots of programs out there to where you have this forced savings plan. And it would be the physical equivalent of something changing in your life where you just let's say you didn't have a car. You hated exercise, but you had to get to work every day. So you took this utilitarian approach to whatever it is, to getting to work. So now you bought a bike because you didn't have a car. Now you're exercising because you have to, not because you want to. You don't notice the effect because it's just you getting from point A to point B to get your job so you can make your money so you can live. And almost by chance, you become fit and you lose weight and all these other things. By doing so, it's the same way, right? Rather than going, I have to go to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym, or I have to eat healthy. I don't want to eat healthy. You know, you do these things because you have to. So you have to pay to live somewhere. And if you own a home, you're still paying to live somewhere, but you're paying yourself. And it's somewhat of a forced savings account. And for 30 years now, I and you have seen it time and time and time and time again. I've seen people, and here's really the cool part, because, you know, I've been doing this since the very early 90s, and I've seen a lot of success stories. The biggest success stories I've seen, and this is people turning their lives around, and this is people that went through the huge downturn of 2007, 8, 9, 10, right? Because I saw some people in some very tough and challenging positions, and we faced them ourselves, you know, and the idea was watching people, and here's a prime example. I have somebody just came out the other day. Credit was just trashed way back in 08 or whatever it was, upside down in their house. They stuck it out. They didn't have a choice. They had to have a place to live. They couldn't sell it, right? And so they stuck it out. Things changed. They lived there like 10 years.
Yep.
Totally turned around. They went from being upside down by $30,000 and using the home affordable, like HARP, the refinance program where you didn't have to have an appraisal because you owed more on your house than it was worth. I refied them back in, I think it was 08. 10 years later, they sell the house. They walk away with like $150,000, right? And these are two very nice, sweet, normal, average people. They weren't making hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. They had a job like just about everybody else, right? They lived, it was middle America. They just did what they had to do to live and survive. They walk away with hundreds of thousands of dollars. They go buy another house and move out of state, almost pay cash for it. Their credit went from like the 500s literally we just did a deal for them 2 months ago. We refinanced them, 800s now. So, I mean, these are the types, and they didn't even know it. Like if I would have said before, guys, you got to move out of your house. You got to do this, this, and this. You got to save money, put it away. Never would have done it. They just wouldn't have done it. I know it. They know it. So it's not even anything like that. That's, you know, where it's anything different than normal.
Right.
They did it through the foundation of having that piece of real estate, knowing, hey, we got to live somewhere. We can't sell the house. We're upside down. Even if we could, why would we do it? We just got to go buy something else that we can't buy. We're here. We're sticking it out, and we're just living our life. So here's this forced savings plan. 10 years later. Right, 150 grand. That would have been very hard to save, because based on their disposable income numbers, they didn't have disposable income. If they would have saved everything they made after they paid their bills, they didn't have $150,000 to accumulate over 10 years, even with the best amount of interest. So these are something that people are seeing that they can't necessarily do without having a home.
Well, and think about it. If they were spending $2,000 a month on rent, okay, they wouldn't have made that money, right?
Absolutely not. No, not even
close. They also would have spent $24,000 a year, which is $240,000 over 10 years. So you add that on top of all of that, where would they be financially?
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, they'd be $300,000 to $400,000 worse off than they are now.
Well, and I can tell you this with absolute certainty. They came to me from a real estate agent who highly suggested they don't sell the home. They try and refinance because the timing was bad. And, you know, the agent knowing they didn't really have anywhere to go. And the only other option was to rent something.
Yep.
You know, and guess what? So they made it through because it was like, well, we have to give it a couple of years. We have no choice.
Yep.
So they did. I was able to get their payment down like $150 a month, which wasn't much, but it was enough to make them feel a little more comfortable. They stuck it out. And then, like I said, then they walk away with $150,000 10 years later.
Yep.
And I saw their assets, and these guys both had, you know, long-time jobs. They didn't jump around in jobs. They didn't have an extra $150,000 between them and their 401ks collectively. They had it in real estate.
But that
they didn't even know.
That $2,000 went toward paying their mortgage down. you know, every month instead of going to somebody else's rent, you know, or somebody else's pocket if you're renting. So you could say the you know, the savings on the appreciation and the money making and the wealth building there, but you also have to figure out that you're not paying rent now either, you know? So that's another $240,000 over 10 years. That's, right. That's a huge amount of money. So the interest that you're paying to your mortgage, you know, obviously that's something that's not, you know, but you take that off of the $240,000 and it becomes real money. You think, $2,000 a month, that's not bad, you know, but when you take it over time, it's a huge amount of money, you know, that you could be putting into your pocket instead of somebody else's pocket.
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, and I'm not even saying this is really an extreme example. I will tell you the downturn of 2008, 2009, and 2010, that was extreme, right? So, I mean, part of it is we saw some extremely huge dips in value, but I will tell you, knowing them for a couple years before we even kind of got into the first loan back then, I mean, their house dipped like 35, 40 grand, which is a lot of money, mind you, but it came up 150,000.
Right.
So, that just goes to show you. Okay. Yes, the numbers are extreme when you think about them. However, take away and just say it remained flat. They still bumped up by 115, 120 grand. So there's a lot to be said about that in terms of almost being automatic, almost being forced, and almost being something that just happened through their diligence of understanding, hey, we've got to be in a place, we might as well own the home, even if we're upside down. It's not a bad investment, you know, in the long term, because we're going to pay for something. Let's at least get something back.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously home ownership is not the perfect solution if you're going to be moving every 6 months or every year or even every 2 years. You know, it might not be. It's a longer term thing. But we went through the same thing. I bought my house in 2005. You know, that's probably the height of the market, you know. And then, you know, 2006, 2007 might have gone up a little bit. But then, you know, 2008, 2009, it was hit tremendously, you know. But we stayed in our house because we had nowhere else to go to, you know, we would have been paying rent or whatever. But, you know, we love our house. But we made it through that downtime. And now our house is worth a lot more than we paid for it back, you know, in 2005, even with the worst real estate crisis that we've seen since the Great Depression. So even in down times, if you can manage through that, it can be a great investment and it can be a wealth building tool, even in the worst times that we could have, which I don't foresee that happening again in a long time. It could, but you know, as long as you can pay the mortgage, you can live through that and be okay on the other end.
Well, there's definitely ebbs and flows of the real estate market, but like I said, at the same time, so think about this. Like, I remember, you know, 20 years ago, one of the things that, you know, we used to offer from on the mortgage side was like, the declining term insurance. You know, it was real big to sell like the life insurance that declined as your mortgage went down. Right. So if something happened to you, your house is paid off.
Yep.
And that was a big thing. I didn't sell it, but it was something that was sold after the fact. Well, I just remember people calling me just repeatedly being like, hey, things are tight, got to get rid of that. So they would constantly get rid of those types of investments first, right? It was the first thing that went. I mean, they didn't adjust their budget to stop doing certain things first. It wasn't like they said, okay, we're going to stop going out to eat less. We're going to stop doing this less. The first thing they did is they stopped the savings and they stopped some of the things that they, in their mind, couldn't justify financially. So when we look at how this really fits into the equation of building wealth and making money, you know, and making money off of real estate, I mean, you just can't beat the fact that when you become a homeowner, you have this somewhat forced savings plan that creates as much, if not more, wealth than really a lot of the other things you're doing, definitely more than anything you're doing naturally, right? When I say naturally, I mean, you're going to pay to live somewhere, like I've always said. So you're going to pay to live somewhere anyway. So that's natural. You've got to make some sort of, you know, monthly commitment financially to living somewhere. So you're going to naturally save money and create wealth just by being a homeowner above and beyond anything else you do. And that, so it's incredibly logical to think that that might be one of the best decisions, if not the best decision you can make, is to own your own home.
Yep.
You know, and again, we've talked about it, and we can go back, you know, numbers of podcasts where we've always said it isn't for everybody. We're not sitting there saying every single person that's looking at us or listening to us right now should own a home, because there are plenty of reasons why you shouldn't. However, chances are good 3 out of 4 people listening should be homeowners.
Yep.
You know, and so I think it's definitely a 75%+ that really should own a home. You know, if you're not nomadic, you have a stable job, you know, those types of things, own a home. So okay. We've talked about this ad nauseum, but I mean, the one thing, and I think it really goes really strongly with what we're talking about right now, especially if we're talking about going into a new year with different goals and ideals for your finances, there are just a lot of people that maybe are like, I don't want to own a home right now because I'm too young, I'm not settled or established. I mean, my plans are maybe getting married down the road and having a family, but changing that mindset to, hey, now is a great time for me to go out and buy a 1 or 2 bedroom condo or 1 or 2 bedroom townhome or a small single family residence, whatever it might be. Do it now while I'm paying the money to rent somewhere anyways. I can get a roommate. And when my life does take that jump and I do have a significant other or I do start a family, now you use that as a piece of investment property. And man, talk about the advantages of that. Now you have that house, you go buy another one, that one gets rented out, whatever it might be. It's the amount, the options are endless.
Or you can sell that one for it for the, with the appreciation and use the down payment for a bigger house. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that. But if you are renting now and you can afford to buy a place, there's all kinds of statistics too that say, you know, home ownership, you know, it equates to making more money, you know, less divorce rates, being happier. There's a lot of psychological benefits from owning a home also that you get for putting roots down and, you know, getting part of a community and that type of thing. There are all kinds of studies that show it will help you in other parts of your life also. So not a foolproof thing for the other parts of your life for sure, but it can definitely help. And you know, if you want us to do a rent to own analysis for you, text the word rent to 720-650-6440. Be happy to do a rent to own analysis and have a consultation call with you. And if you're not ready to do it now, we can make a plan. So, you know, you can save up a little money or you can do whatever you need to do to get in a house, you know, 6 months from now, 2 years from now, whenever you think it's the right time, but it's never too early to start that plan and get your ducks in a row, get your credit right, get your income right, and make sure that there's nothing that we need to clean up before you can buy a house. And then if you're ready to buy a house now, we can help you out with that also.
Yep, absolutely. Well, what do you say, Dick? Here's to resolutions for 2020 and keeping them and staying focused and on track. And not more than anything else, building wealth with real estate.
Yep. And let's make the resolution for you to make a plan for your finances. That's the first step. Figure out who you are, figure out where you want to go, figure out where you are now, and just make a plan to move forward. And if you need help with that, give us a call or text us at that 720-650-6440 number, and we'll help you out any way that we can. Get that plan started, and let's have a great 2020.
2020, here we come.
That's right. The roaring 20s.
Yep. Right.
All right. Have a great day.
Take care.